Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Bucks in the Basement. My name is Chris. His name is Craig. Belly on up to the 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. Welcome into the show. Hey, this is a team that's 5-5 over the last 10 games. And I'm not panicking. I'm not upset about it. I'm actually really encouraged by how well they're doing on the road early on in the season. Does it make you nervous that the hot start is kind of cooled a little bit?
I mean, I think that just because of the concerns that we had about them kind of winning with not playing their best ball, I mean, starting pitching was doing great and still continues to do, you know, fairly well. But, I mean, there have been some little things individually that give you some pause. I know a lot of people are bringing up the overall approach at the plate, the Andy Haynes-fueled offense. That pretty much is just like, take as many pitches as you can. If you, you know, watch strike three go past you, I know that I think they're like top five in strikeouts, top five in looking strike three. I mean, it's like a thing on Baseball Reference. People can go look it up. But I mean, and the percentage of looking strike three. But I mean, until Andy Haynes is gone, and even if he is gone, I don't even know if that changes. I think this is more of a Ben Cherington type approach. And he just has Andy Haynes as a guy who can, you know, implement it. I think that's the way things run with Ben Cherington. Is Ben Cherington has a manager in Derek Shelton who has put up with, you know, terrible lineups for the past few years. And then it's just like playing the analytics of, you know, the righty lefty matchups, all kinds of different things, defense, different stuff like that. And I do mention defense because that's the one thing that does concern me is, you know, prior to the season starting, it's like, okay, we got Michael A. Taylor. So the outfield defense should improve. You know, you have Ke'Bryan Hayes and O'Neill Cruz in his range, Jared Triola winning the job at second base. And I just looked at the stats overall. I think it was yesterday. So it was before yesterday's game where there were some more defensive mishaps. And they were, by FanGraphs metrics, the worst defensive team in Major League Baseball, which is just extremely weird. I mean, that's the thing. I don't see that. I mean, Ke'Bryan Hayes has three errors in like pretty much like 50, 60, you know, chances. And last year he had 450 chances and had six errors. So there's definitely been some weird things going on with that. But yeah, I mean, you're basically, I mean, in some ways, like we talked about last week, nitpicking, but I mean, you're starting to see guys like a Ke'Bryan Hayes. As you were trying to get my attention to start the show, Chris is in the background, pretty much waving emphatically. I'm, you know, looking down at my phone. And I see things with Ke'Bryan Hayes. People are like, well, Ke'Bryan Hayes is smoking the ball. And I'm like, yeah, Ke'Bryan Hayes has hit the ball hard a few times. But overall, average exit velocity for Ke'Bryan Hayes is 87.7 miles per hour, the lowest of his career. The launch angle, which is something we've always talked about with him. I said he always hit the ball hard in the minors. Launch angle is 1.6 degrees. Last year, when he was hitting well, it was 13.2. Barrel rate is nowhere near. It's like 1.3 barrel percentage, 1.9, lowest of his career. And the thing I heard on the broadcast last night, Greg Brown and Waukee were talking about it, and they were pretty much saying, you know, Brian Hayes, and it wasn't even him up, it was Jared Triolo, and Jared Triolo is a guy that hits a lot of stuff to the opposite field. And they're like, oh yeah, that's kind of been, you know, Brian Hayes' approach. The only thing is that when Brian Hayes pulls the ball, 26.2% in that magical 2020, 27% last year when he actually started to perform well and was hitting the ball well. This year, 18.9%, and I'm seeing him go straight back to that approach where he has that inside-out swing, and a lot of his stuff goes from center field right over to the right fielder. And so they're making plays. I think Cedric Mullins made a ridiculous play on him, but a lot of the stuff is, a lot of the stuff is straight at the people because they're like, man, Brian Hayes doesn't pull the ball. So why the heck are we going to sit anywhere near, you know, the left field line? We're just that it's going to make it look easy. It's like, man, he smoked that ball. He's not getting lucky. It's like, no, they're starting to scout him again, and this is the stuff we saw happen. And when he doesn't put the ball in the air, man, I mean, a lot of times people are saying if Brian Hayes hits like 15 home runs, that's a huge bonus. Yes, he has a positive OPS plus right now. Yes, he has a positive WRC plus. But if I would be looking for anything, I would be looking at, you know, this type of stuff is something that once you get to 100 plate appearances, 250 plate appearances, if it doesn't change, the numbers will keep creeping down, and that's where Brian Hayes gets in trouble. And especially right now, like I said, looking at it, right, he has a negative defensive war right now, which I don't look to see that happening for a full season, but it's just like, it's just very weird things. And yeah, I think at this point in time, it is somewhat of nitpicking, but when you have him starting to take like just stuff that, you know, you're kind of looking at Henry Davis, you know, the average keeps on going down, and now he's starting to make some miscues behind the plate. You have O'Neal Cruz striking out 7 times in his last 9 plate appearances. Yeah, I mean, if the trend has not been great for some of these guys, but I think that the other part of this is we're getting into tougher parts of the schedules. The Mets started out, you know, not playing very great. They've been playing pretty well as of late. The Phillies get it going. The Red Sox, you never know what you're going to get into, and you're not playing teams like, you know, the Marlins and the Nationals. So, but like you said, Chris, once we got off to that hot start, if you stay like right around 500 ball and you're around 500 at the All-Star break with the, you know, people that and the reinforcements that you hope are coming, the only thing is it's all, at this point in time, all on the pitching side for the most part. And the hitting has been more of the issue. I mean, Rowdy Tellez hitting for barely to no power. I mean, he's getting on base at a good clip, but when he doesn't hit for power, that OPS stays below 700, hitting a lot of singles. So, I mean, like I said, I can point out a lot of things that have gone wrong, but they haven't gone wrong to the point where we are, you know, 6-11 and it could be going in a bad direction. But I mean, the biggest goal is don't lose series. Hopefully try to win some of those. We get some of these, like, you know, 4-game series, split it with the Phillies, different stuff like that. So that should be like the ultimate goal here right now is, okay, you lost one of the Mets, like, don't lose the series, come right back out and try to do well. But once again, like, we're talking about that depth, and the depth is going to start to get questioned here. We're going to have to see what happens with Marco Gonzalez going to the IL.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. The first thing, though, I want to say is that kudos to you for catching what could be an issue for Brian Hayes, because if I sat down and looked at all the stats on this team, especially at the plate, he'd be one of the people I wouldn't be as worried about, because I'm more concerned about the idea that O'Neal Cruz lost the season last year, essentially, with that injury. And so the season he would have had last year trying to figure things out and adjusting to major league pitching, he's going to have this year. And that's why you see kind of a hot start that's now cooled off to 232 with a 651 OPS, an OPS plus of 81. I know we're under 100 plate appearances, so that can change and go back up. anytime he figures out what's going on. But you're seeing guys cool off and become who they are. Michael A. Taylor, gangbusters, right? Now kind of coming back down to earth a little bit. Not all the way down to what his career average is or even what his better years are yet, but it's starting to even out. That's what baseball is. It's a war of attrition, and the back of the baseball card a lot of times ends up being very similar from year to year, especially with guys who are veterans like a Michael A. Taylor. So you identifying that thing with Cabrian, that's something I'm going to be watching now, because it's extremely interesting, first off. And secondly, you need to have hitters. You need to be able to hit. I mean, let's be honest, the pitching is what is carrying this team, even if people don't see it. When you have, I mean, let's just look at some of these starters. Jared Jones, his walks and hits per innings pitched is still under one, along with Bailey Falter. What? Like, I mean, like, Bailey Falter got picked up in our fantasy baseball league, and I was like, really? Like, what is that guy seeing that I'm not seeing? And then I looked and I was like, I'm blind. I should be paying more attention to what he's doing, because his numbers, they show a guy who's starting to keep guys off base at a very good clip. I mean, Jones and Falter early on in the season, those are closer numbers. Those are late inning reliever numbers on keeping guys off base, but they're doing it in a starter's role. That's incredible. And then Martin Perez has got his whip under 1.30. That's good for him. He's normally a guy that sits a little bit above the 1.30. He's always a guy that's normally down towards the bottom of a rotation. He's pitching well right now. Marco Gonzalez pitching well up until the injury, although you kind of felt like that was a foregone conclusion. It was going to happen at some point. Mitch Keller putting a few too many guys on base. I think we talked about that at the last show. So, I mean, but overall, the staff at this point has been one of the key factors in the team having a winning record. But if the staff falters a little bit and these bats are cold, and I'm telling you, they look like they're chilling. A lot of these guys need to, you know, where's that gear after guys figure you out? When do you, you know, it's constant adjustments. You can have your up weeks and your down weeks. It is a long season. I am concerned that we've got to find enough offense in the lineup consistently to be able to continue to win games at a 500 or better pace. And you bring up that 500 thing. Look, that's my worst case scenario for this team. I took a lot of heat on that. We got a couple of social media comments that people were mad, or comments in the YouTube channel. People didn't like the fact that I suggested that. They want more than 500. I get it. I want more too. That was a worst case scenario for this team. Okay. If they can get, you know, you're going to have stretches, Craig. I mean, let's just talk baseball here for a second, not just Pirates. You're going to have stretches where your team isn't firing on all cylinders in a 162 game season. Then you want to be 500. Then you want to win more series than you lose. That's what you want to do. That's what the good teams do. Okay. Some of the best teams in baseball history have a month in there somewhere in their 162 where they're just kind of not doing it very well. They're getting beat just as many times as they're winning. Okay. So the Pirates have to be able to withstand the downturns, and their downturns should be 500. And their hot should be they're playing above 500. And if they do that, they're a team that's going to challenge for and should be in the postseason this year. That's what you're watching right now. The hot start, though, is over. That's they have cooled. So now it's what adjustments get made. Do they recognize what you're talking about with Cabrian? Okay, what does Derek Shelton do? I really think that this is where we find out when he's given enough, can he be a difference maker as a manager? Because he knows how to get the most out of guys when they're floundering a little bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's definitely hitting a rough patch. I mean, if you told me that David Bednar would have three blown saves, that Aroldis Chapman, you know, his last three times out has, you know, pretty much blown the game, blown the holds, blown saves for the team, and they still are 11-6, I would have told you were crazy. So, I mean, there are.
I wouldn't have told you were crazy. I think Aroldis Chapman was a waste of $10 million.
I think
I'm on the record. I'm on the record saying Aroldis Chapman is a waste of $10 million that could have been used in better ways. And so at this point, not shocked at all that the guy's got a 1.41 whip and is putting way too many guys on base for a relief pitcher and is having some struggles out there. Not shocked at all. Not worth $10 million.
No, and he, even last year, I mean, everybody will look like how well he did with Kansas City, but when he arrived, you know, with Texas, it was like basically he would walk a couple guys each time, and if he didn't strike out the next three with, you know, heat and like that off-speed pitch that he throws, it's just kind of crazy that you go from 101 to like 85, then, yeah, he did struggle. So, I mean, yeah, but it shows,
Craig, again, something we said for years, and this is why I always said relief pitchers were a dime a dozen. Look at this team right now, and you don't need to invest in an Aroldis Chapman when you can find plenty of arms. Contreras, Fleming, these are two guys that, you know, you wanted them to be starters. I know the Rays wanted Josh Fleming to be a starter, and instead what you've got is you've got guys now that didn't end up making it as starters that are being very effective coming out of the pen right now. Hunter Stratton, very effective coming out of the pen. None of those guys are ever going to fetch, or at least unless they put together several seasons, are going to fetch the same kind of money that Aroldis Chapman brings in. And you can find arms in a bullpen. You can rotate guys through. You can take failed starters and make them into effective relievers because they only have to face a couple of batters and they just have to deal with one or two innings every time that it's in an appearance. And so that's why, again, this is that, you know, you talk about how Bednar blew some saves, you know, what's his face down at the Astros? Big deal. Josh Hader's got, like, I think three blown saves too for the Astros. He looks terrible at the beginning of the year. He's given a boatload of money, and they took the closer job away from the guy who was their closer because he's Josh Hader, and he's been terrible. Why? Because relief pitchers are fickle. They're weird things that, like, they're all starters. They're all guys who wanted to be starters, who failed at it, and then found a place in the bullpen. And some have great success, but it's very difficult for a relief pitcher to do that for a long amount of time. That's why I've never understood big contracts for relief pitchers. Because you're like, oh, I'm shocked about Bednar. I'm shocked about Chapman. I'm not, because they're relief pitchers. And that's what happens with relief pitchers. That's why I sit around all the time and say, when they were building, if you can get a laugh for David Bednar, you can find another closer someplace else. Everybody's like, oh, you're crazy. Why would you say that? Because he's a relief pitcher. Now, does that mean that I think David Bednar is cooked and that he's not going to be good this year? No, I think he'll figure it out. But I once talked to a guy that used to pitch in the major leagues on a regular basis. I don't know if I really want to talk. He was all over Major League Baseball. Don Paul in the late 80s, early 90s. And I once asked him a question, having a beer with him. And I was like, you know, do you chase bad whips or bad ERAs or bad stats? If you get off to a bad start as a relief pitcher and you have these gaudy, awful numbers that are sitting up there on the scoreboard, does that affect you? And I expected him to say no. And he's like, oh, yeah, it totally affects you. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, it gets in your head. When you have a 10 ERA in April, you're constantly trying to get it down, and you start making mistakes because you see it up on the scoreboard, right? So, yeah, Bednar could and should, for all intents and purposes, be back to normal. And by July, he doesn't have that gaudy, ridiculous ERA that he has, right? But it is a psychological thing that relief pitchers, it really gets to them. Okay, sometimes a guy never recovers from it or just never is as effective because it's very difficult because they look at their stats. They know what they're doing. They're just like us. They're human beings. Just like a hitter knows when he's hitting 220 and he's like, I am not a 220 hitter. Just like a bowler knows that he's bowling below his average and bringing his team down. And then he starts struggling and can't find where the ball release should be. And all of a sudden, there's always an extra pin left up because it's in his head. It happens with relief pitchers. So I am really curious as to these guys who are the bigger names that were supposed to be in the back end of your rotation who are not doing so well. Will they recover? And how will Shelton deploy them, knowing that one guy's hot and may not make a lot of money and may not have been the guy who was supposed to be the big role, while the other guy's not, even though he was supposed to have the big role and makes more money?
Yeah, and with David Bednar, I mean, everybody knows, you know, my take on David Bednar. I think I've been calling him to be traded at the past two trade deadlines, especially this last one. And yes, the overall numbers will look great, but I mean, for David Bednar, I mean, unfortunately, you know, didn't get to pitch a lot in this spring training, but I looked back and I think this spring training, he had like a little over two innings. The spring training before, he only had like a little over four innings. When they're pitching in those games, that's not the only time they're pitching. They're pitching on backfield games. But yes, he did start late. His numbers usually like coming out of the gate are the ones that like keep it. It's like you can't like get the numbers to look bad by the end of the season. And we always look at WHIP. Last year in April, March and April, he was a 0.692 WHIP. In May, he was a 0.750 WHIP. After that, in June, 1.258, July, 1.412, August, 1.378. So, like, that's the other thing is that,
so, the wheels started to come off in the back end of the year.
Yeah.
And so, look, here's the thing. I think he's a good pitcher, and I'm not saying that he's cooked. I'm not saying that, right? But baseball's littered with guys. I mean, what is he, a 35th round pick? He's a guy that was, like, you know, pretty far back there when he got brought in, all right? And then he comes out, and he has a really good season in 2021. He finished 8th in Rookie of the Year voting. In 2022, he's an all-star. In 2023, he's an all-star. He keeps it WHIP really low, right around one. Well, you know, one guy getting on an inning, which is closer material, not elite closer material, closer material. The elite closers are like those numbers that you had at the beginning of the year, not the ones that are towards the back end. The back end of the year, he was putting way too many guys on base, okay? And now what we're seeing is a continuation of what happened in the back half of the year starting off this year. That's where the concern for me comes from, because baseball history is littered with relief pitchers that come on strong, are really, really good, are superstars for a couple of years, and then somehow the wheels fall off, and then maybe they come back a couple years later and they get a resurgence. I mean, pull up Craig Kimbrell's baseball card one of these days, or Liam Hendricks' baseball card one of these days, and you will find these good two-year stretches and then these just awful stretches by those pitchers who people consider to be the top of their game. That's the fickleness of relief pitchers.
Yeah. And like you said, you can find it in the weirdest of places. I mean, Hunter Stratton's a guy that I knew of, but only because I watch all the minor league games that I can. Wasn't like a highly touted prospect. I mean, did give up a hit last night in a bad situation, but for the most part is pitching extremely well. And he might pitch extremely well for, you know, the rest of the season. He might pitch extremely well for one more game. He might get shelled again. But yeah, I mean, that's where like a lot of this stuff comes in. And you would have never thought that, like, as the Pirates, I looked back at like 2013 through 15, and it was like Tony Watson and Mark Melancon. And Mark Melancon never had the most, like, you know, he wasn't blowing anybody away every single time he came in, even though he just didn't walk anybody. And he hit his spots, but he wasn't your traditional closer, and he was good for a few years. Got paid, and then, you know, wasn't ever that great again. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, we're picking apart stuff here right now. We're going to see.
I mean, we're the worst. Like, this team is winning. It's got a winning record, and we're finding problems. Isn't this a great place to be? Like, seriously, isn't this a great place to be? Remember where we were 2 years ago? And, like, you're just trying to find a positive in some, like, retread that was brought in and had a good 2 weeks? And look at where we're at now. Like, David Bednar, it may not be there. You might need to start, like, you know, putting somebody else in high leverage situations, right? Like, roll this Chapman. What a waste of money. This team is 500 over the last 10 games. They're falling apart. Look at how Brian Reynolds isn't putting the ball in the right place, even though he's hitting it hard. What's wrong with us? Like, we should, you know, there's part of you that just wants to be a happy idiot, right? Where you just go, we're winning. This is great. I'm having a lot of fun. And I think there's the negativity of dealing with all of the crap over the last couple of years where you're still trying to find, well, where are the wheels going to fall off? I don't think the wheels fall off on this team.
No,
I don't. I think that this team is like when they're in a rough stretch are a 500 team. And when they're not in a rough stretch, that's when they're going to, you know, catch up, win series, you know, stay up towards the top of a division that's very winnable and definitely challenge for a postseason spot.
Are you a fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates and supporting small businesses? If so, Bucks in the Basement has you covered. Introducing the Bucks in the Basement Vouch Store, with products from places like Split Rock Coffee. Coffee with a purpose. Established, owned, and operated by disabled veterans sworn to protect America. Or Camp Craft Cocktails. More than cocktails. It's a mission to build longer tables where everyone is welcome. We try and vouch for these products. Bucks in the Basement. Proudly brought to you by Vouch. Visit our Vouch store at bucksinthebasement.com or simply click on the link in the show notes.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with the pitching rotation. I've been waiting all week almost to ask you what you think is going on with this rotation when Gonzalez goes on the IL and people are clamoring for Quinn Priester and people are clamoring for Paul Skeens. And the organization is like, whoa, hold on a second. Skeens isn't even stretched out to be a starter yet. We got to give him time. We're not screwing this up. And we're not ready for Priester yet. So we're not going to rush anybody because we're off to a quick start. It's a very pragmatic way to look at it. Do you agree with it?
Well, the one thing that I looked at, and I mean, people have talked about this, and it's been written about a decent amount already, is that, you know, the Pirates have an off day on Thursday. That's where Marco's, you know, spot in the rotation would fall, would be this Thursday. So you could pretty much just skip that if you wanted to. Bring in Mitch Keller on Friday's game in its, you know, his regular rest, and then wait until Tuesday to deal with it, which is the next time that Marco's, you know, spot in the rotation could come up. I think a lot of this also is that, you know, Marco's got, you know, that nerve issue that he had. This is a forearm strain. The nerves and everything run through, you know, your forearm. And is this going to be worse, or do we catch it early? And this is only going to be 15 days on the IL, which at that point in time, all you would have to do if you wanted to is on that Tuesday. You talked about like Josh Fleming, who I think he threw 58 pitches in relief. In the first series versus the Marlins, he was stretched out and was starting games in spring training. Luis Ortiz was stretched out and starting games in spring training, was throwing upwards of like 40, 50 pitches. You could piggyback those guys for one game and kind of kick the can down the road. Because, I mean, if you call Quinn Priester up right now, are you going to call him up for two starts? And then the next thing you know, Marco Gonzalez, you know, comes back for what would be his, you know, regularly scheduled start, because you could skip one with the off day, pitch a, you know, a piggyback or a bullpen game, and then he comes back on day 15 and is able to pitch and jumps right back into the rotation. Or do you, like I said, do you want to bring Quinn up for a couple starts, see if he, you know, has worked some stuff out? But if he did work some stuff out and Marco's injury isn't that big, then, you know, who in the rotation, and that's also, you know, if Bailey Falter continues to pitch well, Martin Perez continues to pitch well. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. I honestly don't think this decision is going to be made until at least sometime next week. I'm eyeing more of that Tuesday portion of that.
But well, give Quinn one more start. Let's see how because he is keeping guys off base right now in AAA. He is doing that, right? He is keeping guys off base. He's got a reasonable earned run average. And, I mean, he did come up last year and pitch in 10 games for you. So it's not like he's completely foreign to what's going on in the major leagues. And I think the argument of, well, what happens if Marco gets well? What do we do with the rotation? I don't know. I don't like that argument, because what happens if another guy gets injured? What happens if somebody is faltering and needs a break? What, you know, you don't know when he gets back where the rotation will be. And if you have that big of a problem, well, then somebody moves, you take somebody and you move them into a long relief role for a little bit. Okay. And you make sure that when they get their starts, they're getting 4 or 5 innings so that they can move from being that essential sixth starter back into the rotation. Or you send Priester back down. And you say, okay, well, we brought him up, and now we're going to send him back down, and he's our guy that we're going to bring back and forth, and he's going to get a lot of frequent flyer miles, okay, a lot of drive time, you know? And that's what he's going to be this year. So, yeah, I wouldn't hesitate to bring him up when you need him. I actually think that, especially if his next start is very solid, he is putting up enough numbers-wise for me in AAA that I don't see why. I don't like bullpen games. I feel like you're giving up. You're giving up a win, or you're taxing your bullpen, and that's going to hurt you two games later when you have a winnable game and six guys aren't available or three guys aren't available. I hate bullpen games. Okay.
Yeah. And then even with the piggyback, I mean, we've talked about like if Bailey Falter, you know, isn't throwing as well that day and gets into a little bit of trouble. We talked about maybe needing Luis Ortiz for that long relief. I mean, so that would kind of be tough with if you, you know, have him pitch three and have Fleming pitch three, and then neither one of them are available for a few days. So, I mean, that definitely gets into that. And I mean, Quinn, obviously, if he gets up here, he's going to want to stay up here. And like you're saying, it could be, you know, maybe you move Marco back into that long relief role. I mean, who knows and what's going to happen. And what's this bullpen, what's this rotation going to look like in 2 weeks? But I would want to see one more start from Quinn down in the minors. So you could easily skip Marco's, you know, spot on Thursday, have Mitch throw on Friday. Or if you just want to, you know, go the way you've been going before, is even not even paying attention to that off day and just go and, you know, every time you play a game, that's your spot in the rotation. You could play that, that bullpen game on, not bullpen, but that piggyback game on Friday. I have no problem with that. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's not going to be decided just yet. I think that if anything's going to happen, it would probably be, you know, by that Tuesday. And they're maybe trying to see, I mean, they brought Marco back for an MRI. There may be some damage that shows up right away, or maybe that just might be a thing where, like, you know, with Colin Holderman and Carmen Majinski. I mean, Carmen Majinski got, you know, his assignment to AAA and his rehab assignment ended, and he was forearm strain 15 days and, you know, back at it. So, I mean, I think that they're going to not really address it right now. And they do have, they brought Ryder Ryan an extra bullpen arm back up there just to have more guys in the bullpen. So, I mean, I think that honestly, the way that Ben Cherington goes, man, I think he's going to go Friday as a piggyback game, and he may do the same thing again on Tuesday. I mean, that's just, I could see him doing that and not bringing Quinn up yet, but I do see, you got to see, I mean, Quinn's pitching right now where his sinker, the miles per hour is up on that. His off speed pitches are working well. I do want to see, he was a guy that I think almost made this rotation this year. And performed definitely better than Falter and Ortiz. So, yeah, I'd like to
see. I don't believe Falter is going to be long term as effective as he is right now. Okay, I'm sorry to him. Prove me wrong. I look at it as what a nice surprise, right? But I kind of feel like at some point, like Priester probably should have one of those roles, and Skeens should probably have a role in this on this team. Like at some point this year, I'm expecting it, right? So it's a nice surprise at the beginning of the season for a guy that I didn't expect to be as effective as he is, you know? So, I mean, yeah. That's kind of how I look at it. Like, be happy with the good things that you were gifted at the beginning of the year. Don't rely on them too long, because that's how you get burned and you give up a few games and you sink a little bit lower in the standings, and it's not as hot of a start that you were gifted at the beginning by those nice things.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change.